This call is being recorded.
Okay, wonderful. Well, welcome everybody to tonight's teleclass. We have various titles for it. One of them is Get Ready for the Love of Your Life and Then Find Her. It's also No More Dating Mistakes, Protect Your Heart and Find Love. I love coming up with titles. So this is Ruth.
And this is Michelle.
And we are so excited. We love doing these teleclasses, and we love talking about dating and how to date in a way that is really good for you and smart and sane and conscious and will really lead to your finding the right partner and being able to create a healthy relationship.
I think one of the things that many women feel that dating and finding somebody is kind of a crapshoot. You know, they'll go out with somebody and, oh, it'll be nice, or it won't, you know, it won't be nice, or there won't be an attraction, or if there is an attraction, then you get involved, and then things fall apart. And I think what's really important, and what we want to get across, is that it's really in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
You really can set your own relationship destiny.
Yeah, yeah, that is our favorite message, because that idea that it's just about luck is so disempowering, and I lived with that feeling for a long time, because I didn't know how to really assess the women that I was with. I'm working on a book right now for Conscious Girlfriend.
It's
and
almost
so
done.
It is almost done. We hope to have it out, in fact, in August, in time for the Women's Music Festival in Michigan. But so in writing it, I have been revisiting my own relationship history, and it is so intense, and I imagine that many of you on the line may have had a similar time, because I just got into relationship after relationship full of hope, you know, excited, feeling like this time it was really the one, and then over and over again, it didn't work out. It was crushing. It was heartbreaking. And yet it took me such a long time to figure out how to do it differently, and that's really what fuels my passion for doing this work that we do now with Conscious Girlfriend.
And I had fewer relationships, but I did not know how to really assess my potential partners. I there were red flags that I absolutely saw and completely ignored, and so I really didn't know how to go about it. And I picked really not so well.
Yeah.
So
the main thing that well, there are many main things, but you know, one of our messages tonight is that there really are two principles of dating that is smart for your heart. Relationships do start with dating. Dating is really supposed to be a process of kind of trying on a potential partner, you know, spending time with her before getting involved to see, you know, would this work? How do we mesh up? How do our visions for the future mesh up? How do our communication styles, you know, our commitments to communication, the things we want out of life, all those kinds of things, how do they line up? But many lesbians and queer women in particular, we find, often don't spend enough time in that trying on phase. And this was so true of me. Often my dating turned into a relationship on the second or third or fourth date when I really didn't know the person. And on the other hand, sometimes I dated, and if there wasn't an immediate click on that first or second date, often if there wasn't on the first date, I just didn't see the person again. And so I also didn't get to find out if there might have been something there beyond that, you know, initial, you know, is there chemistry or not thing. So either one of those approaches, the getting involved really fast or the just kind of saying, well, there doesn't seem to be anything here and stopping seeing somebody, can also, both of them can be big mistakes. And so the two principles of smart for your heart dating are, one, you do have to find the right partner. And that means both somebody who is uniquely right for you, and we'll talk more about how to know what that means for you in a little while, but there also are certain key characteristics that anyone needs to have in order to really be right for anybody else mm-hmm. who wants to have lasting, healthy love.
And second, you have to be the right partner. You have to have the right skills, and we'll talk about more about what that means too, but it's really important that you develop the skills for communication, for building intimacy, so that you can be the right partner. Because just finding the right partner isn't enough. You need to be the right partner yourself as well.
Right. They're both key pieces. And Michelle and I often talk about the fact that, you know, we are totally right for each other. But if we had met in our journey 5 years before we actually met, or certainly if we had met 10 years before, we would have been a total disaster for each other.
Because neither of us had the skills to be able to really do that.
And I want to say about myself, I didn't know that. I think maybe Michelle knew that, but I didn't know that.
Well, I don't know that I knew it. I'm not sure I knew either.
So hindsight is 2020, as
yeah,
they say.
They do say that.
And so if anybody listening tonight feels like, well, I think I have the skills, I just need to find the right person, that might be true. But we would also invite you to really listen with an open mind tonight, because having a relationship is easy. Right. If the relationship just means you spend time together, maybe you have sex, maybe you don't, maybe you fight, you know, sometimes you have fun, maybe every once in a while as time goes on you have fun. A lot of the time you start triggering each other. Having that kind of relationship is easy. But having a relationship that I suspect is what everybody on the call tonight really wants, which is a relationship that is deep and sweet and easy most of the time, and full of trust and support and fun and laughter and passion, and, you know, when things come up you can work through them without too much difficulty, and so most of the time you're really having a good time. Having that kind of relationship can be easy, but isn't easy until you really know how to do some of the key things
exactly.
that we're going to be talking about tonight.
Exactly.
And how to really choose the right person and show up in the right ways. So we're going to cover as much as we can tonight, but there is so much more to say that we actually teach an entire 12-week course on this topic. And we call it the 12-week roadmap for successful dating and lasting lesbian love. And so we're going to be sharing information about that course tonight as well for people who want to go deeper with us, because obviously in just an hour, you know, we're not going to be able to cover it all.
So before we start, I really want to have you put a hand on your heart and really, you know, applaud your courage in showing up for this call. There's clearly some desire, you want to go somewhere different than you've been. And you showed up for this call. And also, really try to shine a light of compassion on the part of your heart that feels hurt, that feels in pain. Maybe it's because you've just had a bad breakup, or you've been single for a long while and you're lonely, or you've had a string of bad choices, or somebody just left you, whatever that might be, just to really, really feel compassion for your heart in this moment.
Yeah, it's so important to acknowledge both the pain, whatever the pain is, whether it's very present for you now or maybe it's in the long ago past, but the pain that relationships can cause, and to support yourself in that process, and to also acknowledge the hope, the shining desire. And a lot of the women that listen to our classes and you know, come to our workshops, have both that hope, but sometimes also a sense of despair or doubt or cynicism, like maybe it really can never work out, or maybe it can really never work out for me. And again, we're here to tell you that if you do the work that we're going to outline, it can work. It really can. And part of how we know that is because of our own story.
Right.
So we're going to just take a minute to introduce ourselves to you.
So just a quick background for me is I do have a background in neuroscience. I have a PhD in neuroscience, and I have a long Buddhist practice. And those are things that I weave into my experience in working in Conscious Girlfriend. But the biggest thing is that I had one long 9-year abusive relationship. I was with somebody who was emotionally abusive. She was very critical, demanding. I supported her for many years. Eventually, she got physically abusive. And I had to really heal from that. Number one, I had to look at, well, why did I stay for so long? And what was that about? And what kept me there? And I had to do a lot of self-healing and a lot of cultivating of self-love and self-compassion for myself. And that made a huge difference in my life and my ability to have the great relationship that I have now.
Thank you. and so my background is both as a writer and in transpersonal psychology and hypnotherapy and other healing practices like shamanism, and I've had a private healing practice working with individuals and couples actually since 2003. But I too came to this work because of my own troubled relationship history. And, you know, what's so striking to me, and again, something we talk about over and over, is both Michelle and I, you know, we were smart, we were accomplished, we were thoughtful, and yet we kept making these mistakes.
Yeah.
And because nobody was out there saying, hey, you know, look at what you're doing, here's a different way to do it.
Exactly.
And so I had a string of relationships that were, you know, seemed amazing at first and then very quickly deteriorated and became totally unworkable, each of them in a slightly different way. And, you know, the breakups were just shattering. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I blamed my partners. I kept feeling like I'm ready, you know, I'm available. Why do I keep attracting these women that, you know, that can't have a healthy relationship? And so a big part of my growth edge ultimately was realizing, hey, I'm the common denominator here. And so I had to really pull back and do some healing work myself in order to become able. And, you know, that's why I know you have to be the right partner as well as find the right partner,
right?
Because that was a big part of my process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk about how you do find and choose the right partner.
Yeah, so a lot of times women choose on the wrong basis. So, you know, we talk about three levels of compatibility, and most women focus on two of them. The first is sort of, you know, that you like to do the same things. You like similar movies, you know, you like to read, you like to, you know, go skiing, you like to go hiking, you have similar lifestyles, you want to travel, you don't want to travel. I mean, you have those sorts of things in common.
Right. You both like to live in the city or the country.
Exactly.
Maybe you're from the same ethnic or cultural group, or you're both Buddhists.
Exactly.
Or, you know, you line up in those kinds of tangible ways.
Exactly.
That's what we call level one compatibility. And that is important.
It is important.
Helpful.
Yes.
So
level two is what we call the je ne sais quoi. That's the chemistry.
That's French for I don't know what it is.
The chemistry, the sort of rapport, enjoying being in each other's presence, attraction, that sort of thing.
Right. It just feels good to be around her.
Right. And those are the two that women pretty much always rely on.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a third thing.
Right. And those two alone, what we have found is that even though they're both important, it's totally helpful to have various things in common, outlooks, interests in common, that can definitely make for a richer relationship. And it's also, of course, important to have a rapport and have an attraction and a chemistry and enjoy each other's presence.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have both of those things in huge quantities and still have the relationship be a disaster if you don't also have level three compatibility.
Right. And level three is that you share relationship visions and you both have the skills to be able to create that vision together.
And another way we describe that is you share the vision and the commitment to the skill to manifest it.
Yes.
To be able to create that vision.
Yes.
And if you don't have the skill yet, then you both share a commitment to learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And We honor all different reasons for getting in relationships and all different kinds of relationships, and not everybody is necessarily looking for a deeply emotionally intimate, connected, trusting relationship where you can share everything with each other on an emotional level. But most of the women who work with us are looking for that. And so what we would say is if you're in that category, if that's what you want, you know, some people phrase it as, you know, I want connection on the emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual levels. That's a great vision. And if that's part of your vision, then what we would say you need to look for as part of level three compatibility is somebody who is committed to clear, honest, compassionate communication, somebody who knows mm-hmm. what she feels when she feels it and is able to talk about it in a non-blaming way, somebody who has the skills to work with her triggers when right. they come up, you know, when her buttons yep. get pushed. Yep. And of course,
and somebody who has compassion for themselves, and somebody who's wholeheartedly willing to learn and grow.
Right, right. The wholeheartedly willing to learn and grow is a huge thing, and I suspect that everybody on the call tonight has that, or you wouldn't
have shown up, right?
Exactly. So you all get a pass on that.
Yeah.
and many of you probably are already aware of needing to look for somebody else who also has that commitment, because I know a lot of you have done a lot of thinking, you know, a lot more thinking than we had done
mm-hmm, right.
15 years ago
right.
when we were having the disasters we were telling you about. And so there is something, too, about not just saying to somebody, hey, are you willing to learn and grow? You know, have you ever read some self-help books, or do you have a meditation mm-hmm. practice? I mean, that's a great place to start. But we all know there's also something about walking the talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's really important to notice how she communicates, how she treats other people, how she treats her friends, what her relationships are like with other people. As you're sort of, you know, hanging out together in the world, you know, how does she approach the world? Is she negative? Is she positive? Just to really keep track of those little signals, which tell you a lot about more deeply about her commitments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because sometimes people, you know, have been in therapy. I was just talking to Michelle earlier about one of the disastrous relationships I was in that I was writing about in the book, where when I met this person, I thought I was really impressed because she had a Buddhist meditation practice for years and she meditated every day. And that is a fantastic thing to do. You know, I have total respect for people that meditate every day. But that in itself is not enough to make it possible to have a happy relationship.
Exactly.
Or a healthy relationship. And that's what I learned the hard way. So it's not just looking for certain indicators, although those can be helpful indicators. If she has been in therapy, if she does have a meditation practice, those are great. But as Michelle said, it's looking to see moment by moment how she shows up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does she seem able to really listen to you?
Mm-hmm.
Does she
right.
seem able to be present with you?
Right.
Does she seem like she's compassionate toward herself? Sometimes people can be really negative about themselves in a way that's really witty and funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they're sort of making fun of themselves and how much they dislike themselves. And you can kind of laugh and think, oh, that's cute. But it's actually not a very good sign
right. yeah.
if somebody's doing that.
Right.
And, you know, if anybody on the line is thinking, well, I do that, then that's great to notice about yourself. And, you know, it's part of the process that we're talking about of learning how to be the right partner, because usually underneath that kind of pattern, there's some pain. And when you can dive in with self-compassion and a willingness to learn to love yourself, then that pattern can shift. You don't have to laugh about how much you dislike yourself. You can actually start liking yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, you know, if you meet somebody where it doesn't seem like all these things are lining up, it doesn't necessarily mean that you say, you know, next.
Mm-hmm.
It might mean that, depending on which are the things that aren't lining up. But it also could mean that you both recognize, hey, you know, we both have our issues here, but what are our commitments? Is this a dance that we both are willing and ready to show up and do together? Mm-hmm. And if so, how, you know, what's your vision of how you would mm-hmm. show up and do it, and what we would do if we get into trouble, or mm-hmm. when we get into trouble? What's mm-hmm. my vision of that?
Right.
You know, would we go to a relationship coach? Would we go to couples counseling? Would we go to workshops? How, you know, mm-hmm. how do you manage your triggers when they come mm-hmm. up? How do I manage my
right.
triggers when
right.
they come up?
Right.
And it's actually possible to have these kinds of conversations.
Very early on.
Yes. Yes. Like on a first or second or third date. We highly recommend having these kinds of conversations.
And I mean, I think there is a thread out there that I've heard a lot about how you shouldn't say much on the first date. You shouldn't let much out. You know, you should be very circumspect and not say much about yourself. And of course, you don't want to do the sort of you may have been on dates like this where there's the info dump,
the self disclosure dump,
everything bad that's ever happened to this.
Let me tell you all the skeletons
right.
in my closet
right.
in the next hour.
So no, you don't want to do that. But really expressing what it is you're looking for, what it is you really want, what is your vision, is great to do early on.
What is your vision, and what is your approach to manifesting that vision?
Yeah.
You know, so it's not necessarily saying, you know, I mean, it might be saying I've been in therapy for 18 years
uh-huh.
and, you know, I've done all this work. I mean, that's great to share. And it's also like, okay, you know, earlier today I noticed myself get really annoyed at a remark my neighbor made. And, you know, here's what I did with that inside myself. Like I looked at, oh, okay, what's coming up for me?
Mm-hmm.
What assumptions am I making about what my neighbor said? And, you know, how do I work with that? Sharing stories like that is a way of
mm-hmm.
really showing
mm-hmm.
the walking of the talk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the three levels of compatibility, and something about how you can start assessing level three, which, mm-hmm. as we say, we find to be the most essential. The levels one and two are important. But if you don't have level three, the relationship can completely fall apart, even though you love to do all the same things, you have great chemistry, that
yeah,
level
exactly.
three is going to be key.
Yeah.
So we mentioned red flags earlier, and let's talk some more about red flags and what that concept means.
Yeah, so a red flag, I mean, red flags are things that you notice about somebody that can be seem to be really problematic in the context of a long-term relationship. There's some obvious ones, like, you know, somebody drinks to being drunk every night, or they're a heavy drug user, or they blow up at you at the first date when you said something innocuous.
Or they spend the first date crying about their ex.
Right. Or they're not quite sure whether they're still broken up with their ex, or those kinds of things. Some red flags, though, are things which, with more explanation, can turn into yellow or even green flags. So if somebody, for example, has been single for a very long time, if they're really clear about why and they've been doing work about that and they're really in a place where they've been getting ready to date, well, that ends up being a different thing.
Right. Or, you know, you can have been single for a long time because you were just really focusing on other areas in your
exactly.
life and you were happy
exactly.
being single.
Exactly.
And, you know, and now you've reached a point where you're ready to change that. So being single for a long time might be a red flag, and it's about assessing, you know, what's been going on here. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
women are single for a long time because they actually don't have the skills to be in a relationship. And sometimes that's not the case at all. So we have, in the 12-week course, we have a long list of potential red flags that we go over,
mm-hmm.
and then more detail about what we suggest that somebody look at and inquire into and observe to see whether this is truly a red flag or whether it actually becomes a yellow or green flag.
And the truth is that in working with women, we have learned that 99% of the time when they look back at failed relationships, they saw red flags and ignored them. So it's not as if they didn't see the red flags. It's not as if they didn't notice what was going on. They saw them right in front of their face, but they chose to ignore them for various reasons, and we'll talk about that also in detail in the class. But because there are lots of reasons why people want to override their knowledge of those red flags.
Yeah, you know, some of the things that we hear a lot are, you know, well, who am I to judge?
Right.
Or
yes.
Nobody's perfect. And we do want to be clear, we are not suggesting that you judge. This isn't about passing judgment.
Right.
It's great and it's important and it's valuable to accept somebody exactly the way she is. But you do need to assess whether the way she is makes her somebody you want to be in an intimate relationship with.
Exactly.
And this is something that I didn't do well at all, you know, in the relationship I was just writing about in the book. You know, very early on, she was talking about having gone through a hard time in her life, and I said, oh, you know, something like, did you get some support from your friends? And she basically said she didn't have any friends. And this was somebody who had lived in the area for 20 years. And so I was taken aback that she didn't have any friends. And a little part of me dimly thought, oh, what does that mean? You know, that may be a bad sign. But then I quickly thought, well, she's so wonderful, you know, I'm sure it doesn't really mean anything. And, you know, later on, of course, it turned out that it did mean something. It meant that when any conflict came up, she was really unable to work it through. And so she burned her bridges in all of her friendships as well as all of her intimate relationships. You know, and again, we're not saying if somebody doesn't have any friends that you just dismiss her, but that you find out more, mm-hmm. that you assess, that you let it be part of your observation process.
Right.
And the red flag topic is interesting because we've seen women do both not enough screening of red flags on the one hand, you know, like seeing them but ignoring them, and
too much.
Right.
Yeah. So and make red flags of things that are based on previous experience that don't necessarily mean that, you know, that this. So, you know, if somebody has an experience with somebody with red hair, and they, this is an example, you know, not a real example, but and so they won't date anyone else with red hair ever again, right?
Right, right.
That kind of
That's kind of a silly example,
it's a silly
but
example.
Let's use a more real life example.
Right.
You know, there, you might feel like, well, I was with a bisexual woman once, and
right.
she left me for a man, so I
right.
would never date anybody bisexual again.
Exactly.
That would be an example in our experience of overgeneralizing.
Right.
It means that a button gets pushed for you around bisexuality, and yet plenty of women who are bisexual have, you know, a totally different ability to show up and work through things than maybe your ex did and are not going to leave you for a man. And, you know, so it's, again, it's needing to look in both directions. That's really the assessment process,
mm-hmm.
so that it's being willing to look at things that are bad signs and respond wisely to them, even if the person has many other great qualities and, you know, she's really cute, she's hot, there's great chemistry, you know, but she drinks every night. Okay, that's a red flag that you need to look at. And then on the other hand, if you notice that, you just keep dating, but you're kind of saying, well, she's not right for this reason, she's not right for that
mm-hmm.
reason, she's not right for that reason, you may be accurately assessing the red flags, or you may be scared, and the fear may be leading you to dismiss people who actually shouldn't get dismissed, where
right.
you know, they actually have a lot of potential there, and it's your vulnerability that might be leading you to misread some of the things. Another great example that we can share is that we actually know somebody who came to one of our workshops early on who lives with her ex-partner.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they are great friends. Things are totally clean and clear between them. They don't have any lingering baggage from their relationship. They're really just family to each other. And this woman ended up shortly after our workshop meeting somebody great, and, you know, they've formed a relationship, and now the new person is going on sabbatical for a year from her job, and she's actually moved up to the Bay Area to live with her new girlfriend and the other woman,
right.
the new girlfriend's ex.
Right.
So, and they're all totally into it, you know.
And oftentimes that somebody lives with their ex is considered a red flag.
And oftentimes it actually would be a red flag.
But in this case, it's not at all.
Right. In this case, I would say
it's a green flag. Yeah.
Because both of the women involved had the skill and the commitment and the ability to work through their stuff so that they could really be family to each other.
Right.
But red flags are really, really important. And to illustrate the importance of them, we have this little analogy that we like to use.
Yeah. So let's say you're going shopping for a car, and a used car. And you go to the used car lot, and you see the cutest car. It's like your favorite color. And if you like sunroofs, it's got a great sunroof. It's got the exact kind of seats you want.
It's got a great stereo.
Amazing stereo. You're like, okay, I'm gonna go take this on a ride.
But you almost feel like you don't even need to test drive
the
car.
You're like, you're ready to sign the check right there, right?
You fell in love with it so fast.
Yeah. And then you're driving along, and then all of a sudden you notice there's a little bit of smoke coming out of the hood, and you're like, oh, it'll be okay, you know. And then somebody stops in front of you very quickly, and you hit the brakes, and your feet almost go through the floor, and you almost hit the person in front of you.
But you don't.
You don't. You manage to. And then you make a turn, and you hear this cranking noise, as you're turning the car. So the question is, you wouldn't buy this car.
Or would you?
This
car?
I don't know. I wouldn't buy the car.
Probably if you were actually car shopping, you wouldn't buy that car.
And you wouldn't say, oh, it'll get better once the car gets to know me better. It'll fix itself.
Right. We all know that the brakes and the smoke coming out of the hood and whatever is making that scary noise are not going to fix themselves just because you bought the car and taken it home. And yet we do tend to say that kind of thing, especially if you're lonely, if mm-hmm. you've been in a long sexual dry spell, again, if this other woman has really great qualities, you might feel like, okay, I'm going to just, not worry about the smoke coming up from under the hood.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And one of the women that came to our workshop recently said, and we loved her honesty, she's like, well, I have some smoke coming up from under my hood too.
Uh-huh.
And again, we all do, actually, right?
We all
have red flags. When Michelle and I were getting involved, I said to her at one point, because we were sharing a lot of our relationship history, I said, I feel like I should have yellow caution tape all around me.
I remember that.
And, but the good thing is that we were able to acknowledge this stuff and talk about it and, laugh about it some of the time. Some of the time it was scary.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not your history that's the problem. It's how you're holding it now
mm-hmm.
and what you're doing with it now.
Exactly.
And again, we know this for sure because we both have things that, are huge red flags in our history. And if we hadn't learned how to deal with them well, they would have wrecked our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But because we did learn how to deal with them and we showed up to deal with them, we created a totally different possibility for ourselves.
Yeah.
So we hope this is making sense. We know we're going kind of fast here. And again, we do offer a whole 12-week class that will give you the time and our support and the community to go through this process more slowly and deeply so that you can really work with all these concepts that we're talking about. And really look at the red flags in your previous relationships and come to terms with, okay, did I see them? If so, why did I not pay attention? What red flags do I have? How did I contribute to what happened? How can I make peace with what happened? And, also become able to do it differently in the future. There's a ton of experiential work that is really involved here that obviously, we're not going to be able to lead you through on this call. So this call, we're hoping to give you a ton of information, and we hope it'll be really valuable for you regardless of whether you sign up for the 12-week class. But the 12-week class will give you a chance to really do the work rather than just hearing about it and thinking mm-hmm. about it.
Right.
So another really important piece is understanding a brain chemistry state called limerence. And if you've been on any of these calls with us, you probably have heard of this term. We didn't coin it. It was coined by someone else. But limerence is that state when two people begin to get attracted to each other and they begin to get, the mutual attraction.
The sparks are flying.
The sparks are flying. They have sex. Okay. Although it can happen before they have
sex. Oh, it totally happens before
yes.
sex. Yeah.
And although sex has a way to really kind of add fuel to it.
And it also can happen, by the way, even when it's not reciprocal.
This
you know,
is true.
It,
yes.
it's kind of like a fire. You know, like the more gasoline you throw on the fire, the more likely it is to become a really big blaze. And so if there's mutual attraction, and especially when there's sex, the fire gets bigger
really
and bigger
big.
And bigger.
Right.
But it's possible for a fire to get started, you
on
know.
One side.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Even just like, you know, the little cigarettes. But smoldering in the weeds.
Uh-huh.
So a person can go into full-on limerence all by herself, even when the other person isn't reciprocating. So that's important to know, too.
Yeah. And so limerence is a brain state. It evolved from our need as a species to reproduce and keep going. And even though two women can't have offspring without some help, it doesn't really matter. It happens anyway.
We have the exact same biochemistry.
Yes. And in fact, we think that it happens actually more strongly for two women because men seem to have a breaking mechanism which keeps them from diving in quite so deeply so quickly. And what limerence is your brain is pumping out oxytocin, endogenous opiates like heroin.
Your own internal version of heroin.
And you're basically stoned. You're not totally in your right mind.
And I suspect everybody or just about everybody on the call knows the state of limerence very well because it's the state that we call the honeymoon state. It's usually actually what we refer to when we say we've fallen in love. It's that amazing, wonderful, thrilling state where, you know, she's all you can think about and you can't keep your hands off
mm-hmm.
of her. And, you know, you just smile every time that you think of her
right.
and you see you got a text from her and your heart starts pounding.
Yes.
You know, it's like it's so much fun. And it can feel like love. It's like over and over again when I went into this state of limerence and I did not know the term. I did not know what it was. And so I thought it was love. I was like, wow, this person just looks like the person I've been looking for all my life. You know, we just
mm-hmm.
click. It's so amazing to be together. We just seem to understand everything each other says, you know. And I've never taken ecstasy, the drug. But what I've heard from people that have taken it is that that's kind of how it feels. Like your heart is open. You just feel so connected. Only when you're on ecstasy, you feel connected to everybody you see. And when you're in limerence, usually it's focused on one person. But it's basically the same phenomenon as if you took ecstasy because the chemicals that your brain are pumping out are the chemicals that make us high.
Exactly.
And
so it's really important that you understand that state and that you know that it's not the same as love. And that it can be mistaken for love, but it's not the same as love. And so there's some things you shouldn't do during limerence. For example, like get engaged or get married or move in together
or
move across the country for someone else.
Right, right. I mean, one of my it's amazing how many dating horror stories or relationship horror stories I have. It's you know, I'm like sort of chastened and embarrassed and proud of it all at the same time because it's part of what qualifies me to do this work now. And you know, one of my stories is that I had just gotten out of one relationship and I hadn't had much fun or sex in a long time. And so I met this woman, and we instantly started flirting. There was all this chemistry. We went to bed together 3 days later. It was really fun, and, you know, now I know we were, you know, we just flew into Limerence. And I was moving out of town 2 weeks later for a job in another state. And, you know, I thought this was love. And so I invited this woman to move across the country with me, even though we had known each other for 2 weeks. Or less than 2 weeks at the time.
I'm sure there are many lesbian stories like this.
Right, right. I mean, we all know the, you know, what does a lesbian bring on the second date
right.
joke.
Yes,
right,
exactly.
Right.
Yes.
And so if you've done this, again, you know, we totally extend to you our understanding and our compassion, and we want you to extend your compassion to yourself.
Mm.
This is so easy to have happen. It's so easy when you don't know what limerence is and, you know, you're not aware of this phenomenon. Of course you think it's love. And I thought it was love over and over again. And especially, as Michelle said, because from what we can tell, two women tend to go into limerence and dive into this state of, you know, bonding so much faster than couples of other genders or sexual orientations. We see this as a particularly huge thing in the lesbian and queer women's community. And so that's why we talk about it a lot. So what do you do to avoid this? Part of it is as Michelle said, you know, you consciously try to restrain yourself from making big life decisions within the first 6 months,
mm-hmm.
if not longer.
Mm-hmm. And you also consciously try to slow things down. Take things a step at a time so you have time to really learn more about who this person is.
And you either wait for quite a while before having sex, or if you decide to start having sex sooner, you make a clear distinction both within yourself and between the two of you that having sex is not making you an instant couple. Because what, you know, what we both used to do and what we see a lot of women doing is if there's chemistry, you know, they proceed to bed pretty quickly, and if it feels good in bed, then they're in a relationship.
Right.
And that cheats you out of what the dating process is designed to give you and needs to give
mm-hmm.
you, which is the chance to try on your connection with this person
mm-hmm.
and really see how it fits.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, as somebody that pretty much always used to have sex pretty quickly, you know, I know that if somebody had said to me, like, wait 8 weeks or 10 weeks before you have sex, or 8 or 10 dates or whatever, I would have been like, what? You know? Now, some of the women on the line, I'm sure you already do that, but that wasn't my pattern. And so, again, you can choose to do something different, but what we see as the danger with that is because women do have the biochemistry that makes it easy for us to bond quickly, it's pretty uncommon that both women are going to be able to keep things really clean and clear once you start having sex. You might say, well, I know that I can. I've done that before. You know, that's an ability that I have. And if so, that's great. And if she says, I know I have. I've done that before, too. You know, that's what we're going to do. You know, it could work. But often one of you or both of you is going to develop feelings that you weren't expecting. And so it's often true that even if you start out saying, hey, we're just going to be friends with benefits while we get to know each other better,
mm-hmm.
it could slide into
and this
the
is
relationship,
actually, right.
even when the relationship
yeah.
isn't really the right
yeah.
fit.
And this is actually where skills comes into play, because it takes a lot of ability to communicate about your desires, about your vision, about what you want, about the fact that you want to maybe go slow. It really takes some communication skills to navigate that territory.
Absolutely. And some of the skills that are involved in our minds in being the right partner, skills and characteristics and states that are involved. We mentioned some of them earlier, but we'll just go over a list again. Part of it is that you are really fully over your last relationship and all the others. You're not still hurting. You're not still angry. You're not still missing her, wishing it would have worked out. Those are totally normal states, but they're not a state from which it's good to get into a new relationship.
Right.
So if you're in that state, what we would suggest is do some work to get over that last relationship and to make peace with the past so that you can open your heart again from a clean place. And that's one of the things that we cover in the 12-week roadmap class, because it can be really hard to get over a lesbian breakup because, again, there's so much bonding. So, and a lot of women, even 5-10 years down the line, they haven't gotten to that place of resolution. So it's not just how many years it's been, it's how it feels inside your heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of being ready.
Yeah.
And another part of being ready is to have a clear vision of what you want. What do you want? What kind of relationship do you want? Do you want a relationship that involves kids or not? Do you want a relationship where you, have really deep, intimate conversations? Do you want a relationship? What do you really want?
Do you want to live together? Do you not want to live together?
Right.
You know,
right.
How important is sex in the picture? What's your vision of sex? Is it like, both people say sex is really important, but, do you have agreements about, how often and what kinds of sex and, if those things are going to line up?
Right.
How do you both want to live your lives? How do you socialize? Like, often we see that an extrovert and an introvert might be really attracted to each other. But then, the extrovert wants her partner to come with her to all these events and parties, and the introvert is like, no, I want you to stay home with me.
Right,
All of these things about really knowing yourself, knowing what works for you, knowing what you want, honoring what you want, believing that it's possible for you to have what you want, it's all part of developing the clear vision.
Right. And also having the skills to be able to fulfill that vision.
Right, right. So, if you want a relationship where you get to spend a fair amount of time separately and be with your separate friends and do separate activities, then you need to know that you have the skill to not get jealous or to work with your jealousy if it comes up. If it's like, oh, my partner's been spending a lot of time with her friend Mary lately, what's up with that?
Yes.
Because again, jealousy is totally normal and common, but if you don't want it to get in the way of your relationship, then you need to be able to work with it. And also know that you have the skills to bring these things up when they're coming up for you and to work with them internally.
And if you want deep intimacy, that you need to know how to create it and to sustain it.
And there's a whole lot of pieces to that. Again, these are things that we spend weeks on in the 12-week roadmap class. One of them is the skill that we call communicate to be heard. So that's the skill to really be able to communicate cleanly without blame or self-blame, without criticism, because when we communicate with blame or criticism, the other person usually responds with defensiveness, and then the communication, doesn't get heard, turns into a fight, goes down a road we don't want to go down. And so the ability to know what you're feeling when you feel it and then being able to speak about it in a really clean way is key. And so we spend, a week on that with audio lessons and worksheets. And, of course, it takes depending on where you are on your growth path, you may have done a lot of work on this already, or you might not. And if you haven't, it does take longer than a week to get really good at it. But when we say we spend a week on it, what we mean is that we talk about it in depth. We give you some practices. We give you some exercises to do. We focus on it so that it really brings your attention to the process of building this particular skill. And that makes a huge, huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And along with being able to communicate clearly, there's mm-hmm. also the listening.
Yes, there's being so oftentimes we have filters. Sometimes these filters come from childhood. Sometimes they come from previous relationships. Some people have filters where they feel that they're being criticized or they're being blamed or they're being shamed, even when it was a neutral comment. And so part of the skill, too, is to be able to notice what those internal filters might be, to be able to notice what comes up when someone says something that sort of brings up some emotion, and to be able to ask, oh, is that really true that I'm being blamed for this or I'm being accused of this? Is that really true that I'm being criticized? To really be able to look at that. And also, if you are truly being criticized or blamed, to be able to respond in a way that's not defensive automatically.
And this is such a huge issue, because criticism and blame are the biggest things that destroy relationships. And there are statistics that prove this. There are studies that prove it. So it's not just us saying it. And it's because when we feel criticized, we don't feel loved. It's like feeling criticized is the opposite of feeling loved and accepted for who and how we are. So having the skill to speak without criticizing and to listen without hearing criticism is huge. Now, of course, if she really is criticizing you, then that becomes part of what you either need to work with together as a couple or screen out. But often people, many of us, and this is totally has been me as well in the past, although I've gotten a lot better at it, we can be quite reactive. And so when somebody says something that's actually neutral, it can still feel hurtful because of our filters. And so this is part of the work of learning how to listen cleanly,
mm-hmm.
which again, we cover in the 12-week roadmap. And part of what we're kind of pointing at here when we talk about the communication, both mm-hmm. being able to speak cleanly and listen cleanly, mm-hmm. is really about triggers.
Yeah, and triggers are when something happens or something is said and it brings up a strong emotion in you. And in general, what's happening there is that your brain is going into the fight or flight mode. And that mode is designed to keep you alive. It's designed to keep you from getting eaten or getting trampled or whatever. But of course, it's only, in this case, it's not a threat that's that intense, but your brain thinks it is. And there's something called an amygdala hijack, which basically means the amygdala, which is a little part of the brain that does this, cuts off your cognitive mind. It just cuts it off because you're supposed to be running or fighting.
Right. If somebody is literally threatening your life, you don't need your cognitive
right.
function. You need
exactly.
all of your brain power to be going to fighting the threat off or running from it.
Right. Right. And so that means that you cannot respond in a way that is going to be very helpful
or sane or healthy
or
compassionate
when you're in that state.
Right.
You need to learn how to calm that down, turn off that amygdala hijack, bring that cognitive mind back online.
And again, we all have triggers. And for some of you listening right now, it might even be kind of triggering just to hear us talking about this, because we're saying things that could be reminding your body of that state. And this state is really intense. And so if you are finding yourself starting to go into that fight or flight mode or feeling triggered, what we would invite you to do right this minute is take some slow, deep breaths and just let yourself breathe in and breathe out and put a hand on your heart. Let yourself feel the surface underneath you, whatever you're sitting on, if you're sitting down or standing on or lying on.
And just take some time to really come back into yourself. You know, let yourself physically feel where you are. Let yourself look around and anchor yourself where you are. Notice what's around you. You know, give your brain some time to see, oh, okay, you know, I'm right here. There's not a mortal threat. You know, I can connect to myself. I'm safe where I am. And hopefully, if anybody did get triggered, this process is helping you shift out of that. And this process that I just took you through is one step in the process that we call the SCORE process, which is the process that we developed and teach to help people get out of the triggered state so that you can engage with the relationship and have the conversations you need to have from a calm, centered, wise, healthy place. Because what happens otherwise, when we don't have the ability to do that, is disaster.
Right.
The vast majority of relationship conflicts, fights, pain, you know, trauma is caused by one person getting triggered, you know, speaking and acting from a triggered place. That makes the other person get triggered. Then the triggers are cascading back and forth, and it's just a nightmare.
And the cool thing about this method is that not only does it help you handle conflict, it actually helps you heal conflict so that you can get closer to each other. Because each person gets more in touch with what's going on inside of themselves, and they can share that. And they're sharing it at a level that's different than trying to solve a problem.
Right.
And so it really ends up bringing people together and building intimacy, not just taking care of the conflict.
Right, right. It's not the same as problem solving, and it's not the same as processing.
Right.
Usually with processing, or at least what I've seen most lesbians and queer women doing when they say they're processing, is speaking from a triggered place and trying to get the other person to change. And that doesn't work. And that's
right.
What leads us into these long, draining hours of, you know, painful conversation
right.
that we hope is going to make a difference,
mm-hmm.
but somehow it doesn't. That's processing. And so that's why the method that we teach is totally different. So we've been giving you a little window into part of what we cover in the 12-week roadmap to successful dating and lasting lesbian love. And basically, just to tell you a little bit more about that class before we open things up for questions, we spend roughly 6 of the 12 weeks covering these relationship skills that we've been talking about, and then the second 6 weeks covering the actual dating skills, like how do you meet her? What do you do on the first and second and third date? How do you screen for these red flags? You know, how do you call things off when you realize you need to? How do you deepen things? You know, how do you handle limerence? That stuff is really important, and that's the second 6 weeks. But in the first 6 weeks, we cover this stuff about making peace with the past, becoming really compassionate with yourself, and gaining these communication skills and these skills to handle triggers. Because what we have found is that if you don't have those relationship skills on board, it's not going to go well. You could have great dating skills, but
right.
the minute that you start having
yeah.
a conflict with the person you're dating, or maybe not the minute, but you know, as the relationship deepens and so the conflict gets more intense,
you have a mess on your hands.
It's going to fall apart.
Yeah.
Right. And we also find that women, on some level, often know, you know, at least when you've been around the block a few times, you know, you've had painful experiences a few times, you kind of know if you're not fully ready and you don't have all the skills, and it may actually keep you from connecting, keep you from finding the right person, whether you're fully conscious of that or not. So that's why we cover the relationship stuff in the first 6 weeks and the dating stuff in the second 6 weeks. And the class is online. So basically every week we make available to you a new set of lessons. There's usually several brief audios and several worksheets with practices for you to do. Some of them are self-exploration practices. Some of them are kind of journaling practices. Some of them are practices, you know, just noticing things that come up. Some of them are actually practices for you to do in the world with, you know, anybody that you know. You know, obviously, if you're not in a relationship, you wouldn't be doing it with a partner, but you'd be doing it with friends or neighbors or coworkers. They might not even know you're doing it, but you know you're doing it. You're trying on these new skills. So there are the 12 weekly lessons, and then there's also every other week, there is a two-hour live group coaching call done by phone. So it's like this, except that it's a smaller group, and everybody gets to talk. So you get to check in about how you're doing with the lessons. You get to ask your questions. If you have something coming up that you're not sure how to handle, we do some role playing with you or some laser coaching where we, you know, walk you through it. And of course, you also get to learn a lot from the other people in the group, the other women, conscious growth-oriented lesbians and queer women. We have amazing people join our classes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really, really cool. You know, some women that have done a lot of work on themselves for a long time, and some women for whom it's newer, but they're totally into it and committed. It's really an mm-hmm. amazing community.
It is, yeah.
And so you get to hear both from what other people are asking and doing and from us working with other women, and you get to connect with them in the private Facebook group that we have for the Roadmap class and for our students and clients.
It includes a 1 hour of individual coaching with me. I'm the primary coach, and it will basically be, it can be on anything that you need some extra help with, something you want to dive deeply into. Maybe you want some extra help on your first date, or maybe you want some extra help with an online profile, or maybe you want some extra help with self-love and self-compassion. Whatever that might be, that's what that hour is for.
Yeah. So in summary, the 12-week class gives you the 12 weekly lessons, the 12 hours of group coaching, because it's every other week a two-hour group coaching call. And, of course, if you can't come live, you'll also get a recording of that. The private Facebook group, so you get to know the other women in the class, and the 1 hour of one-on-one coaching. And we have added this all up of, you know, what we would charge for each of these things individually. And it's basically, we came up with a figure that was close to $1,500. But what we actually charge for the class, because we, of course, want to make it affordable for you, is $497. So it's basically I forget what the figure is, like a 70% discount or something, because it's, you know, you get the whole program.
And you can pay that in installments as well as in one lump.
Right. It's $497 if you pay it up front, or it's three payments of $197 each. So we love teaching this class. We're right in the middle of the second round of it, and we're about to open up a third round of it, which we plan to start next week, actually. So the timing of this call tonight is perfect, because if this is speaking to you, the time to sign up is now. You can sign up, you know, right after this call. The URL to go to would be consciousgirlfriend.com/roadmap, because it's the 12-week roadmap to successful dating and lasting lesbian love. And if you forget that URL, if you go to just consciousgirlfriend.com, you will see there's a menu item that says roadmap, so that'll get you to the same place. And if you forget that, you can call us or email us. And the program does close. We're closing enrollment Saturday night, so you have a few days to decide. But we're offering a special incentive for people that decide tonight, because we know sometimes you know, you could be sitting on the fence. You're like, oh, you know, this sounds good, but I need to think about it. And is this the right time? And it might be, you know, it's a little scary and all of that. And so just to try to make it easier for you to decide to go for it, if you sign up tonight, we will give you a second 1 hour of coaching. And so that's basically a great bonus because you get that much more personalized support and handholding. You can use it before a first date. You can use it after a first date. You can use it to, you know, figure out how to post an online profile or how to, you know, handle the whole internet dating thing, although we actually do talk about that in the roadmap class. So you could use it in all sorts of ways. So we would love to have some of you join us for the next round of the 12-week class. It would be our privilege, and it would be just wonderful to get to work with you in that way. So we're going to open things up for questions.
Yes. So press ** on your phone to unmute yourself.
And you're welcome to ask us questions about the roadmap class or anything we covered tonight or anything we didn't cover tonight that's just on your mind about, you know, how to date wisely or how to have the relationship you want. So whoever's ready to jump in with a question, just hit **.
Hi, Ruth.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear two people, actually. Wonderful. So one of you go first, and then the next one goes second.
You go first.
I'll go first.
Thank you. First of all, thank you so much, Ruth and Michelle, for facilitating this teleclass and for taking questions. So I have a woman in my life who I've been friends with and who recently revealed to me an attraction for me and an interest in taking things beyond a friendship. And since then, I've noticed a few red and yellow flags in her that have caused me to sort of distance myself from her. But I've been feeling sort of guilty about it and wondering if I'm distancing myself from her, as you mentioned before, because I'm scared. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Okay. That is a great question. Do you want to share some of what you're seeing as the red flags or the yellow flags?
Certainly. Well, the first huge red flag is she's still married. She claims that she's going through the process of a divorce and that she has drawn up the divorce papers, but nothing has moved forward past just drawing up papers. However, her partner and her are living in separate states.
Okay. And how long has it been since they parted?
About 9 months.
And how does she talk about her ex? Does it seem like she's been doing some thinking and some processing about what happened and why it ended? Do you sense some thoughtfulness from her about it?
Well, she did mention that she's going to therapy. But when she talks about her ex, she mostly talks about the wrong things her partner did in the relationship and not necessarily anything she's done or things she could have done differently.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a red flag.
That, of all the things you've said, that's the real red flag to me. Like the fact technically still married could mean all sorts of things.
Right.
You know, it's a good
right.
thing to pay attention to, but it's not a rule-out factor. But to me, what's more of a rule-out factor is that she's blaming her ex for what went wrong. That suggests that she is not actually emotionally self-responsible, that she doesn't know how to own her part in things. If that's the case, it's not going to be a pretty picture if the two of you get involved, right? Everything's going to be your fault. Anytime something goes wrong, it's going to be your fault. Does that make sense?
It does.
Now, if you want to give her the benefit of the doubt, you could ask her more directly, you know, like, you know, hey, Jane, I'm making up her name, obviously, you know, hey, Jane, you know, you've talked a lot about how your partner did such and such. You know, I'm wondering, like, do you see any role you played in that? Like, is there a way you can?
Right. That's a great question.
And see what she says, because you can learn a lot from that kind of question. If it's like, no, really, I, you know, I showed up, I said what I wanted and needed, but she, blah, 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 then you really have your answer.
Okay. That's a good point.
I mean, you know, one of the things that I talk about is, you know, as you've heard, I was in a 9-year abusive relationship, and there was a ton that that person did to me that was really bad. But for me, the primary piece was about what was going on for me. Why did I stay? Why did I allow it? And it wasn't about self-blame. It was just about looking at it. And so when I talk about that, I don't talk about how horrible, sometimes I talk about a little bit how horrible she was, but mostly it's about why did I stay? What was going on for me? And that's the sort of approach,
right,
that's really important.
And so we're not saying, by the way, that all relationship problems are equally created 50-50 by both people.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes a person, you know, like Michelle was with this abusive woman, but the way that Michelle contributed was by choosing the wrong person and then staying all those years. And so when she talks about it in a self-responsible way, she says, yeah, this person criticized me all the time. She did this, she did that. And my part of it is that I did, you know, I stayed. I let her do this to me. I stopped doing things I wanted to do because she would pick fights about it, you know, all of those pieces. So sometimes there's a great line from a book called A Return to Love by Marianne Williamson, which I'm sure some of you have read, where Marianne said that people would come to her and say, you know, I really think 90% of this was the other person's fault. And Marianne would say, great, then that means there's 10% we get to work on. You know, and maybe with this woman you're talking about, 90% of it is her ex's fault. It's possible, not all that likely, but possible. But if so, she's still got to be really showing up to work on that 10%. And acknowledging why she chose somebody that would do 90%, or else it's going to be a, you know, bad sign. So we've spent a lot of time on this because I'm sure many other women out there have a similar question. But I hope this has given you some help.
It has. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Great. So who is the second person that wanted to speak?
That's me.
Great. Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello. My
go ahead. I'm the third person.
Oh, okay.
My question is, I'm just really curious why I keep attracting women who are closeted. Considering that I myself have been out of the closet for 20 years and counting, and I'm the complete antithesis of what anyone would consider closeted. So that's just kind of kept me scratching my head for the last couple of decades. And I'm not really sure how that's something that I would be contributing to. I mean, it's just one of those strange things that just keeps, it's a recurring pattern. And I want to know what you think of that.
Well, how does it affect your relationships with these people, the fact that they're closeted?
Well,
how does it play out?
Maybe because of the fact that I am so open about it in my own life, that I'm out with my friends, I'm out with my family, I'm out at work, and it's like I feel all of the, like if I'm out with them or something, I feel like I'm being held back from their lives. Like they don't want to introduce me to their family. They don't want to introduce me to their friends.
Uh-huh.
They don't want to take me to work parties. And you know what I mean? It's like, I feel like I'm being hidden. I feel like I'm not being acknowledged. And that bothers me because if I'm in a relationship, I mean, it's not necessarily that I want to shout it from the rooftops, but I want to be acknowledged.
Okay.
As your partner.
Right. So, yeah, and I totally agree with that and support that. And what I'm curious about, and this is exactly the kind of thing that we would love to do more coaching with you on if you choose. But from what you're saying, what I'm curious about is that it sounds like the dynamic creates a kind of a partial relationship, like it truncates what's possible between you.
Exactly.
And, truncates certain kinds of intimacy.
Oh, yes.
And so I guess what I would explore within yourself, what I'd suggest exploring is stuff around intimacy, like fears that you might have about what would happen if somebody was totally, fully available and present. Would you feel completely able to be totally present with her, or would there be any fear that you might lose yourself in the relationship, or that, you know, her wants would take over? Would it possibly even be scary that maybe, you know, she would want too much from you if she were fully there? Or, you know, just sort of going in those kinds of directions, because it sounds like you have focused on the particular way it plays out, which is that they're each closeted, but I would look more at the underlying dynamic. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, because we hear from women a lot, you know, like another woman that we've spoken with, she's like, every time I fall for bisexual women, you know, and then they leave me for men. And so that, you know, with her, it's like, okay, well, what, you know, how much do you love and value yourself? The fact that they're bisexual is really not the issue. It's the fact that they're ultimately not fully as into you as you are into them. That's what the issue is. So it's kind of diving underneath the surface way that the pattern plays out and getting curious about any reason at all. And, you know, there's way too many of them for us to name right now, but any reason at all why the full-on intimacy might
be
to you.
It's Vivian calling. You asked me to call you after 7. Did you speak to Juan?
Vivian?
I think there's something.
Oh,
that's a different caller.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so I hope that this is giving you some insight.
No, it is, and I appreciate it.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Thank
Great.
You very much for your time.
Again, we would love to do some further work with you, because obviously this topic merits more than we can do just in a, you know, 5-minute, 10-minute response.
Oh, you'll be hearing from me, trust me.
Wonderful.
Right.
Okay. And so,
thank you.
Monica, was that you that was trying to ask the third question?
Yes. And I just asked two very brief questions.
Okay.
It's very interesting. I think it's important to live in a place that has that's very gay friendly.
Okay.
I live in a very homophobic area, Dutchess County, New York, which is upstate, 50 miles north of New York City. I called Kingston, which is the nearest gay-friendly place, and ironically, the lady, there are very few people. It's a very small gay community, and a lady at the LGBT center said, guess what? Because I told her I was thinking about Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
She's from Portland, Oregon, and she highly recommends it.
Well,
over Kingston.
There are a lot of lesbians that are engaging with our work in Portland.
we have a little fan club in Portland.
Right, right. We have a lot of women taking our classes and coming on our calls from Portland. So if that helps you make a decision,
yes,
we have a good sense about Portland, too.
My second question, how can I make the most of going to an Olivia Cruz that has 200 to 300 single women on it? Thank you.
That is a fantastic
question. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing about that is that, I mean, I don't know what sorts of little events they have to help people meet each other, women meet each other. But just, you know, having in mind what your vision is and being able to talk about that vision with other women, maybe just sitting by the pool, you know, saying, hey, you know, how are you? And, you know, whatever, just to sort of, you know, I don't want to go too in-depth, but just, In terms of being able to really strike conversations that are deeper than just, oh, yeah, I live here, and oh, yeah, I live there.
Right. Know. Often I think when we meet people, you know, if there's a tendency to get a little awkward, and so the conversation defaults to like, oh, so where did you grow up? How many brothers and sisters do
right.
you have?
Right.
Oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. And to kind of cut into a deeper conversation faster, you might just feel into what questions would help you do that or what things you really like to talk about. And so it might be like, you know, I'm really passionate about such and such. Like, what are your passions? Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was thinking maybe we could have a conversation about, you know, if you were to get in another relationship, what would be some of your top priorities for
mm-hmm.
what that relationship would look like?
Right.
You know, or just to feel into questions that obviously would feel authentic to you, so you didn't feel like you were, you know, sticking a microphone in somebody's face on a TV show or something, but that things that you are genuinely wanting to talk about yourself and wanting to hear about from someone else, that would also help you get a sense of whether you and this person might be a match.
Thank you.
And also just help you develop a more authentic connection with her. You know, another one might be like, hey, I've really been working on developing more self-compassion in my life. Is that something that, you know, that you're interested in at all? You know, or any of these things that have to do with communication skills and things that you've been learning or delving into, that could be a conversation starter.
Thank you.
Yes.
Sure,
yeah. Wonderful question. So we have, I guess, about 10 minutes left. Was there
so we'd love to take more
somebody
questions.
Else that was trying to ask a question?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. I live currently in a small town, which is very redneck, and it's very hard to meet any lesbians at all. And I just was wondering, would you be covering that? And if so, how much and how to get in touch with a community where there are more lesbians available
mm-hmm.
other than the internet?
Mm-hmm.
And another question, another part of my question is, are you talking psychologically or metaphysically or both?
Those are two good questions, and we'll answer the second one first. We basically blend science, psychology, and spirit in our approach.
Great.
Because Michelle's background is neuroscience. She also went to seminary. She also has a Buddhist practice. My background is transpersonal psychology and some other spiritual practices. So we really bring it all in.
Great. I'm a Buddhist too, by the way.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. And in terms of the living in a small redneck place, I'm interested in why you said other ways beside the internet.
Well, because I've been on the internet for a while and I don't know how to reach out and find someone. Just to give you a little bit of a background, I was in a relationship for 15 years, and then it became a friendship for 10 years, and then she passed away suddenly at a very young age.
Mm.
And I feel that I've been grieving for the last year, which is how long it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get over this grieving and the depression that comes with that, and I'd like to open myself up to being able to find the right woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And it also sounds from the way you're saying it like that the grief might be part of what's been getting in the way.
Right.
Yeah. So if you were to do some more work with us, we would certainly try to help you through that process of really, you know, there's something about loss that, especially that sort of loss, because when somebody dies, that's different than a breakup kind of loss. It's
right.
I mean, they're similar in a way and they're different in another way.
Yes.
And so there is just a process with that, but then we also use a lot of tools around fully feeling the feelings, allowing the feelings to move through you and fully bring compassion to yourself in that process, that I would say, you know, I don't know what your process has been so far, but I think in general, with any strong feeling, the more that we're able to ground ourselves and hold ourselves through that process and let the feeling fully move through us,
yes,
it does tend to shift more quickly.
Yes, I've been doing that.
Wonderful.
Yes, I'm certainly not stuffing it away.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, wonderful. And then there's a... And again, you may totally be doing this already. There's the skill.
But there's so much noise on the line. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Oh, it's funny. I'm not hearing the noise, but let me try and speak louder. Is that better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. So part of, and again, this goes for working with any strong feeling, is feeling the feeling and not getting caught up in a story about it. And you may not be having any stories, but a story that I might imagine somebody might have in this situation would be, you know, I'll never be this close to anybody again. You know, that would be something that would could actually block the feeling from moving through, because it's not a feeling, it's a mental construct. And as a Buddhist, I'm sure you totally understand that.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So that's just a quick answer to that part. And what I would say about you saying that you've been on the internet and you haven't found yourself able to connect that way is that part of what we cover in the 12-week roadmap is how to do internet dating, or it's not really dating online, but it's meeting women online in a really wise way. How to write a profile that really describes you in a great way, describes your vision, and how to screen other women's profiles. And online dating, of course, is not the only way to do it. And certainly for people in a place like, you know, San Francisco or New York, there are a lot more alternatives. But
right,
for somebody where it sounds like you live, online dating is really just going to be so helpful in widening your pool.
Right.
And, you know, Michelle and I met actually through a Craigslist ad, and we were in the Bay Area. So, I mean, I always have found that online dating, even in a population with tons of lesbians, is a great tool because it lets you be so much more specific about who you are, what you're looking for. You know, especially when what you're looking for is pretty specific, it's hard to figure out how to find that if you're just, you know, meeting women at a hiking group or a community center or something like that. So we think there's a lot of advantages to online dating, but we would want to help you do that in a way that really works well for you.
Okay. And maybe it's finding the right online site.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's part of it too. The right one for you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah. So, so this has been so wonderful.
Ruth?
Yes.
Ruth?
Mm-hmm.
If you have just a 1 minute, I just want to say to people who might be on the line that I'm in the current class. We're in about the fourth or fifth week. And, you know, I could go on for 10 minutes about how great this class has been, and we're only not even halfway through. So
thank you.
I just highly recommend it. I, you know, sometimes my cynical brain comes on and why do I have to spend all this time, these hours with this homework, blah, blah, blah. But it has already so radically changed my outlook and my sense of my skills and my sense of how I relate to my own feelings, how I've sort of been able to accept them and be more aware of them and not be afraid of them. And
sorry about that. We had a technical glitch. Keep going.
Oh, okay. So anyway, and last week, you know, I was a little bit panicked because I was in the mountains all week. And then I tried to download it, and, you know, I couldn't download it. But so I was experimenting with my friends, you know, like when there was a conflict or something. And they didn't know I was practicing with them, you know. But it was amazing. It was kind of like, you know, when you're, if you want to do track and field or something, you don't, you're just starting at a real local level. You know, mm-hmm. it was just about something sort of mundane, mm-hmm. but I really thought about it, and I said, okay, I could do this, and I got out of the tent, and I said, okay, I'm going to do this without blame, I'm going to initiate it, you know, and then it went so well, because everything was a misunderstanding,
uh-huh.
but I really come to see, especially the one last week, we had a session the whole week about looking at past relationships, and I was completely resistant to this. But when I did the exercises, I saw my part. It was so clear to me, and in a way, never before, you know, like that I was very passive, that I was always not willing to put out my feelings or my needs or my opinions, you know. I was just sort of letting somebody else drive all the time. So I just can't say enough about this class, and I think it's, you know, it's like those commercial for American Express. You know, you can't put a price on it, really.
Thank you. Wow, we really appreciate it.
I am so honored and moved that you are on this call tonight and that you took the time to say that. And I want everybody else.
Oh, sure.
We didn't put her up to this.
No. Yeah.
But thank you. And I'm so glad that, I mean, that's why we're doing this work.
Exactly.
And you know, I know who's speaking, and I know you're somebody who's done a lot of work already. And so it's even more of an honor that, you know, that you're saying this and that you're getting this much out of the class. And we're just thrilled.
Oh, yes. And I have to say, too, that, you know, even into the second week, I was a little bit like, oh, you know, apprehensive. And I met somebody who had done it. And I said, how was it? And she said, you know, you get as much from it as you put into it. Mm. And she said, but, you know, I'm from the East Coast. I can't get into this kind of woo-woo stuff. But, you know, so I said, okay, well, you know, but I decided to do it quite religiously. And I do, you know, try to put a lot into it. And even though I'm resistant to some of the exercises, but I just get so much out of it. So it's a fantastic course. Yeah.
So we're so glad.
it's worth, you know, four times what you're charging.
Oh, thank you so much. You are our poster child of the moment. And you know, really, we're just, you know, we so appreciate you saying this to all of the other women on the line, because as far as I know, there's nothing else like this out there. Nothing that is targeting lesbians and queer women specifically.
Yeah, but also the combination. I mean, I know a lot of the, you know, I know the Gottman and the all these people and have studied them, but that pulls it together in a way that also lends the spirituality and the two, you know, the biochemistry. I mean, it's just really very unique. So yeah.
Well, thank you, and we are thrilled to be able to provide this to our community. So, again, a reminder for those who do sign up this evening, you will get an extra second one-on-one coaching hour, as well as all the other things that the class comes with. And when you go to the URL, that's consciousgirlfriend.com/roadmap, you will see the list there of all the things that the class comes with, the coaching calls and the lessons and the Facebook group and the one-on-one coaching, and a reminder of some of what we cover. And if you have questions about the class, you can email us. We actually have a little chat window on the sales page too, so if you happen to go to it tonight and have questions, we'll be able to chat with you. And basically, most of all, whether you ever do anything else with us again or not, we wish you love and happiness and joy and the kind of really healthy, deeply fulfilling relationship that you want and deserve. And, you know, my final words would be just to keep in mind that you have the power to create that if you choose. Nobody else can do it for you, but nobody can stop you. It is in your hands.
Yeah, and I guess my final words are just to remember to hold yourself with compassion for whatever feelings that got brought up this evening in our conversation.
And thank you for showing up and opening your mind and your heart. It's just a huge thing, you know, for each of us personally, and I think it's a huge thing for our community. You know, it's like for everybody that's in the U.S., we can get married now, you know? So it's like,
it's huge.
And we want our marriages, our legal marriages, to be happy and healthy if getting married is a dream of yours. And if it's not, then, you know, we still just want a happy, healthy relationship. So thank you. We are blessed and honored to work with you, and we wish you lots of love.
All right. Here, have a good night.
Good night. Hope to get to work with you in the class. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.